Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org. Quarantine Shaming: U.S. Navigates Radical New Social Norms, by Jillian Flaccus, Associated Press. The chairman of Arizona's Asian Chamber of Commerce didn't see much downside to attending a small dinner at a local restaurant to bolster the business and bring together other leaders to discuss how to help Asian American eateries devastated by the coronavirus. That was, at least, until he posted about it on Instagram. The feedback was swift from people who were appalled that Ryan Winkle would promote a gathering, even a small one, as COVID-19 raged and entire cities were urged to self-isolate. I started getting some messages saying, "Hey, why are you trying to spread the virus?" I was like, "It's a small event and everyone has washed their hands and they had sanitizer on the tables," Winkle said of the dinner held Saturday in Mesa, Arizona. "My thinking is always about the economics. Imagine when all these businesses shut down. That's a whole different problem." Quarantine shaming, calling out those not abiding by social distancing rules, is part of a new and startling reality for Americans who must navigate a world of rapidly evolving social norms in the age of COVID-19. As schools close and shelter-in-place orders sweep across the U.S., the divide between those who are stringently practicing self-isolation and those who are still trying to go about some semblance of a normal life has never been more clear. Complicating matters, what was socially acceptable even 48 hours ago may now be taboo as government officials race to contain the virus with ever-expanding circles of social isolation. The time matrix seems to be shifting. I've never known several days to go by so slowly, and watching the collective conscience move more and more in one direction day by day, said Paula Flasker, who lost her bartending job when California's Mammoth Mountain Ski Resort closed this week. For those who must go into work, the divide is widening too. Stephen Dell, who is considered an essential employee at his job at a warehouse near Chicago, wears a mask to work because a family member has a compromised immune system. He's terrified of catching the new coronavirus or transmitting it to his loved one at home. Dell posted a sign at the warehouse entrance asking people to put on masks that were provided. Immunocompromised family. But several co-workers didn't wear them, he said. One of them coughed into his hand while standing by Deal's desk, and then began to touch things on his desk with the same hand. "That angered me greatly," said Deal, who posted a video of himself in a mask on Twitter. "And when I made a comment about it, they shrugged it off." Others who are trying to juggle working from home while caring for kids who are also home are making smaller and more mundane choices that nevertheless bring shocked responses or even rebukes from coworkers, friends, and even family. "Is it okay to run out for a coffee? Can you allow your children to go to a playground? What about sending kids to daycare centers, which remain the only lifeline in many states that have closed schools?" Flasker, the woman who lost her bartending job, said she was upset by the hundreds of people who flocked to her tiny hometown of Bishop, California, from Los Angeles and other large cities to vacation the minute school shut down. The 42-year-old climber posted angry messages about the crowds on Facebook and was quoted in an online climbing magazine, Thundercling. "So many people descended on a climbing spot called Happy Boulders over the weekend that lines of people were walking into the narrow canyon. The routes to reach the top means dozens of people were grabbing the same handholds in the rock again and again, potentially spreading germs," she said. "When people from urban areas are escaping, they're escaping to vulnerable areas that have incredibly limited medical resources. And it felt pretty entitled and selfish, she said in a phone interview. It feels like a lot of first world privilege knocking at our door. By Wednesday, the crowds had abated, possibly because of the article and social media posts. But this weekend will be the true barometer, Flasker said. Her concerns echo those who slammed St. Patrick's Day revelers who flooded bars in Chicago and New Orleans, and those who called out college students who have been thronging to beaches for spring break. An Instagram video of hundreds of partiers packed onto a booze cruise in the Bahamas drew comments calling for a boycott of the company that organized it. Some of the strong online reaction to these crowd-sized violations likely stem from the fact that authorities would be hard-pressed to enforce the new rules and are relying on a social compact to keep everyone safe. In Oregon, for example, restaurants that continue to offer dine-in service would face only a low-level misdemeanor, and social shaming is much more effective. Jeff Carreras, owner of Tracy's Original Irish Channel Bar in New Orleans, said he's faced similar scathing criticism over the crowds that gathered outside his bar Saturday. People on Facebook accused him of raking in money while disregarding growing warnings about the danger of crowds during the outbreak of COVID-19. One poster, Claire Hassig, said on the bar's page that her 70-year-old mother had to walk by to get to her car and was mobbed by drunken idiots with zero respect for social distancing or her safety. Carrera said he kept the crowd inside below its 250 capacity and didn't set up the usual outside bar, but crowds formed anyway. It was the bar's idea to have police break them up when his staff couldn't do it, he said. There's no way I would encourage the public to come out and spread a virus that's as bad as it is, he said. We did everything we were asked to do. Those appalled by the behavior of some of their fellow Americans have welcomed a crackdown this week from many state and local governments that are adding daily to lists of closures and bans. Bars in a popular part of Portland, Oregon, were busy on Friday and Saturday nights, but are now dark after Governor Kate Brown banned all dine-in service at food establishments and bars statewide. Alec Burke, who wrote an angry post on Facebook about the weekend crowds, said most people likely just need that kind of guidance from authorities to recognize the seriousness of the crisis. People don't understand the implications of what even a single day does to the body count from the virus at this stage, he said Wednesday. But people should know better, and they should do better. Winkle, for his part, has re-examined his approach to social distancing since the weekend event. It helps that Mesa instituted a ban on dine-in serve at restaurants and bars on Tuesday. I get it, and I get where they're coming from, he said. I definitely took it to heart and thought maybe it's time to start slowing things down. McConnell plan, $1,200 payments, $1 trillion rescue takes shape, by Andrew Taylor and Lisa Mascaro, Associated Press, Washington. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell proposed direct payments of $1,200 per person and $2,400 for couples as part of a sweeping Republican response to the coronavirus outbreak, according to a copy of the legislation obtained by the Associated Press. The GOP leader unveiled his plan Thursday as Congress raced to craft a $1 trillion rescue package to shore up households, health care, and the U.S. economy amid the pandemic crisis and nationwide shutdown that's hurtling the country toward a likely recession. We need to take bold and swift action as soon as possible, McConnell announcing his plan on the Senate floor. It's an opening salvo in fast-track talks with Democrats as President Donald Trump urges Congress to go big to respond as Americans reel from the crisis. keeping paychecks flowing for idled workers as jobless claims skyrocket is a top priority for both the Republican and Democratic plans emerging from Congress. McConnell's proposal aligns with the Trump administration's push to swiftly send checks to American households. Under the GOP leader's plan, the aid would be phased down at income thresholds of $75,000 for individuals and $150,000 per couple. Additionally, there would be $500 payments for each child. But Democrats have their own proposals for ushering aid to Americans, and even McConnell's GOP senators panned Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin's idea of direct checks of $3,000 for a family of four, preferring instead to use the federal dollars to keep workers who are asked to stay home on the business payrolls. "What I want is income, not one check," said Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican South Carolina, summing up the views on of some exiting a long private meeting of GOP senators on Capitol Hill. "One or two checks makes no sense to me," he said. "It's not a check, it's checks. It's not a payment, it's income," Graham said. "The best thing for us to do is to create an income stream." The swift-moving effort in an all-but-shuttered Capitol came as the first two lawmakers tested positive for the COVID-19 virus, others are self-isolating, and the usually tradition-bound Congress faced calls to ease rules and allow remote voting. Trump administration officials, including Mnuchin and economic advisor Larry Kudlow, are expected to return to Capitol Hill on Friday to launch bipartisan negotiations with Senate Democrats. Vast government spending of untold sums is causing unease among GOP senators whose careers have been built on halting the flow of federal dollars and trying to halt rising debts. But other Republicans said they had no choice but to provide a lifeline to Americans and small businesses. "The government is causing this economic crisis by shutting down the country, and so we're going to have to pay for what it costs," said Senator Lamar Alexander, Republican Tennessee, the chairman of the Health Committee. The Treasury Secretary said Thursday the checks would be direct deposited into people's accounts under the plan the Trump administration has proposed to Congress. The payments would be $1,000 per adult and $500 per child, so that a family of two parents and two children would receive $3,000, Mnuchin told Fox Business Network. "The goal is to get that money out in 3 weeks," he said. "That's a lot of money for hardworking Americans," Mnuchin said. Republicans want to have small businesses send paychecks to workers being forced to stay home through government loans that would not have to be repaid to prevent employees being cast aside. They also want to shore up industry. McConnell's plan would provide $208 billion in loans and loan guarantees to distressed sectors of the economy, including $50 billion for commercial airlines and $8 billion for air cargo carriers and $150 billion for other eligible businesses. But those loans would have to be paid back. Democrats, compiling their own priorities in the House and Senate, suggest other ways to keep paychecks flowing in what Schumer called employment insurance, which he characterized as unemployment insurance on steroids. At the same time, caring for the expected surge of sick Americans is a priority. Congress wants to ramp up production of medical supplies and rapidly erect temporary field hospitals under new authorities President Donald Trump invoked in the Defense Production Act. "America needs a Marshall Plan for our health care system," said Senate Democratic leader Chuck Schumer, citing the post-World War II program in which the U.S. financed rebuilding in Europe. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi urged Trump to quickly use his new wartime authority to push manufacturers to start producing the medical supplies. "There is not a day to lose," Pelosi said in a statement. "We must put more testing and more protective equipment and more ventilators into the hands of our frontline workers immediately. The centerpiece of the White House effort is $500 billion to start issuing direct payments to Americans starting early next month. How to spend that money, though, remains a key question. The Treasury Department proposed two $250 billion cash infusions to individuals, a first set of checks issued starting April 6th, with a second wave by mid-May. Officials have previously said the money is expected to be allocated by income level to exclude the super wealthy. Direct payments would go to U.S. citizens only and would be tiered based on income level and family size. The two payments would be identical, with the second wave starting May 18th. Meanwhile, industries of all kinds are lining up for help to avoid cratering the economy and devastating the home lives of their employees. Groups representing hospitals, doctors, and nurses are asking Congress for $100 billion to help the healthcare system respond to the challenge of COVID-19, which could involve providing treatment for tens of thousands of seriously ill people. The total price tag is sure to grow beyond $1 trillion, lawmakers said. Taken together, the administration plan promises half of the $1 trillion to families and individuals, with the other half used to prop up businesses and keep employees on payroll. Trump has already signed into law a $100 billion plus bill to boost testing for the coronavirus and guarantee paid sick leave for millions of workers hit by it. Earlier, Congress passed and Trump signed an initial $8.3 billion effort. As Congress rushes to compile the sweeping economic rescue package, the biggest undertaking since the 2008 recession and financial crisis, in a matter of days, it also is considering its own way of doing business. The Senate plans to remain in session until the emerging coronavirus bill passes, with weekend sessions possible. The House, which is on recess, won't be recalled until it's time to vote. In the House, Representatives Mario Diaz-Balart, Republican Florida, and Ben McAdams, Democrat Utah, released statements saying they had tested positive for COVID-19. The first two known cases in Congress. Several other lawmakers have cycled in and out of self-isolation after exposure to individuals who had later tested positive for the virus. On Thursday, McAdams told NBC's Today Show the House should consider changing its rules to allow remote voting. Majority Leader Steny Hoyer said he shares lawmakers' concerns about the potential risks of congregating in groups and is considering ways to adjust our voting procedures to follow the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's recommendation on social distancing. News Organizations Drop Paywall for Coronavirus Info by David Bowder, Associated Press, New York. News organizations across the United States are lifting paywalls to share coverage of the coronavirus pandemic, a public service many hope will convince more readers to eventually become paying customers. At the same time, the societal shutdown caused by the virus is exacerbating a decline in advertising revenue that has slowly choked many publications, already resulting in layoffs and furloughs. Media outlets, big and small, from the New York Times to the Telegraph Forum in Vicarage, Ohio, are letting people read their coronavirus coverage without a subscription. Financial concerns shouldn't keep anyone away from news and information that could be a matter of life and death, David Yonke, Telegraph Foreign editor, wrote to readers explaining the move. The drill is familiar at the Palm Beach Post in Florida, which has similarly dropped paywalls when hurricanes loom off the coast. The big difference here is no one knows how long this storm will last, said Nick Moschella, executive editor. When they need us most, they want us for free, Moschella said Thursday. I think there's an expectation of that. On Sunday, the website for the Columbus Dispatch in Ohio had more than 1 million page views and 670,000 unique visitors. A week earlier, the site had 271,000 page views and 55,000 visitors, said executive editor Alan Miller, who's also regional editor for 21 Gannett newspapers in Ohio. Readers are hungry for information about local shutdowns and people in the community who have tested positive. A popular story in Florida was the exhausting saga of a man in Boca Raton who needed to get tested. Service stories like one that detailed steps people should take if they suspect they have the virus are also popular, Miller said. We're making it free as a public service and hope that readers who appreciate that would consider subscribing to the Dispatch, he said. Some organizations make their pitch explicitly. The Washington Post's website has a letter to readers from executive editor Marty Baron that links to a $29 yearly subscription offer. I hope you'll agree that a first-year subscription at that price is a bargain for journalism that is at the heart of our democracy and that is, especially now, vital to public health, Barron wrote. The Seattle Times has seen its online readership triple and, at key moments, increase tenfold, executive editor Michelle Matassa Flores wrote in a column. Subscriptions have increased as a result, she said. It's one thing to watch CNN and hear about what is going on at the White House, said news consultant Ken Doctor. It's another thing to hear about what's going on down the street. But Doctor fears that whatever gains that news organizations will make among readers with a newfound appreciation for their work will be more than offset by losses in advertising revenue. If concerts and other events are being canceled and people are avoiding restaurants, that advertising will dry up. The weekly Sacramento, California News and Review cited those factors this week in halting print publication there and at its sister papers in Chico, California and Reno, Nevada. We will have to suspend publishing and lay off nearly all of our amazing talented staff, we hope only temporarily, Jeff Von Kanel, the publication's president, said. Similarly, the Military Times is furloughing dozens of its staff members for 2 weeks. The publication, aimed at veterans and active military, is dependent on special events, which have been called off. Advertising has also taken a hit at the Palm Beach Post, but Moshella said it's too early to tell what the eventual damage will be. We would hope that readers would soften that blow for them if they could, doctors said. Poll, Fear of Virus Infection Spikes in U.S. by Sarah Burnett and Emily Swanson, Associated Press, Chicago. Concern among Americans that they or a loved one will be infected by the coronavirus rose dramatically in the past month, with two-thirds of the country now saying they're at least somewhat concerned about contracting the COVID-19 illness. That's up from less than half who said so in February. Still, a new poll from the Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs Research finds that about 3 in 10 Americans say they're not worried at all about the coronavirus. And while the survey found that most say they're taking at least some actions to prevent the disease from spreading, experts say it also shows the country is not doing all of what's needed to reduce infections, such as canceling travel. Some set of people is still going about their daily lives, and that needs to change pretty rapidly, said Caroline Pearson, a senior vice president at NORC at the University of Chicago and a health policy expert. Now they need to do the hard things, not just the easy things that don't disrupt their life. The poll found that younger adults have greater concerns about the coronavirus than older Americans, with 43% of adults under 30 being very worried, compared with 21% of those age 60 and over. Pearson said that may be because younger people are more likely to feel uncertain about jobs or health insurance, or to worry about older family members like parents and grandparents. That disparity of age does not match the threat posed by the virus. Deaths to date in the U.S. mirror the experience in other countries, with about 4 out of 5 fatalities occurring in people 65 and older, and no deaths in children, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. While that poll found that about 3 in 10 Americans say they're highly worried about the illness, about the same number are unconcerned, with 7% saying they were not taking any of the prevention measures asked about in the poll, including more frequent hand washing or staying away from large groups. That's a red flag for Libby Richards, a Purdue University nursing professor who teaches courses on population health. We do need that 33% to change if we're going to keep this under control as much as possible, Richards said, adding that maybe that 7% of people are already excellent hand washers, but I doubt it. The survey found that about 9 in 10 Americans say they're washing their hands more frequently. Roughly 7 in 10 are avoiding large groups, and about 6 in 10 are avoiding touching their faces. Older Americans are especially likely to say they're avoiding large groups, with 77% saying they've done that in response to the coronavirus. Public health officials have urged people to do their part to slow the spread of the virus before hospitals and other health facilities are overwhelmed. Schools and sporting events have been canceled, and restaurants and Las Vegas casinos closed. President Donald Trump's administration said Monday that people should avoid social gatherings with groups of more than 10 people. But of those who had travel plans in the next few months, a minority, 22% of those who had domestic travel plans and 41% with international travel plans, say they've canceled them. About another 3 in 10 of each group say they've considered canceling, while the rest are still planning to travel. On Saturday, Trump expanded European travel restrictions due to the global pandemic, telling Americans, if you don't have to travel, I wouldn't do it. The CDC has advised that travelers are more likely to get infected if they go to a destination where the virus is spreading and in crowded settings such as airports. The poll was conducted March 12th through the 16th, when information about the virus was changing rapidly, as was the Trump administration's reaction to it. Trump declared the pandemic a national emergency on March 13th, making up to $50 billion available for local and state governments to respond to the crisis, and announced a range of executive actions aimed at expanding testing for the virus. The administration also started work on a $1 trillion aid and stimulus plan. And now I'm going to read a few business articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Friday, March 20th. A tough climb ahead. U.S. seeks $3 billion to boost oil producers as prices plunge. By Ellen Nickmeyer and Kathy Buswhite's Associated Press, Washington. The Trump administration said Thursday that it is seeking $3 billion from Congress to top up the country's strategic petroleum reserves, potentially propping up U.S. oil producers after crude prices crashed globally. President Donald Trump had directed the Energy Department last week to fill the United States' emergency stash of crude oil to the top, over objections from congressional Democrats who said he was favoring climate-changing fossil fuels and the profits of oil giants. Plummeting crude prices benefited U.S. consumers filling up their cars, Trump said Thursday. But on the other hand, it hurts a great industry, and a very powerful industry, Trump told reporters. West Texas crude prices fell below $21 a barrel Wednesday after oil producers Russia and Saudi Arabia stepped up pumping, threatening the market share of U.S. oil, and as the coronavirus moved the world toward recession and tamped down consumer demand for energy. Energy Secretary Dan Brulette told reporters Thursday that the move was about filling up the country's 713.5 million barrel strategic petroleum reserve at a time of cheap oil, not about throwing U.S. oil producers a lifeline in rough markets. The reserves are stashed underground in Texas and Louisiana. It's a common sense move. Everyone who's done any personal investment knows you do your best to buy low and sell high, Brulette said. Brulette also denied the United States was intervening against market forces to boost U.S. oil prices. Pointing to Russia and Saudi Arabia's surge of production, he said the purpose of the nation's strategic oil reserves is to mitigate this type of disruption. Though the oil industry's major trade association, the American Petroleum Institute, says it does not want a government bailout, some in the industry are pushing for embargoes or tariffs. Harold Hamm, executive chairman of Continental Resources, a major shale oil company, asked the Commerce Department to investigate what he contends is illegal dumping of below-cost crude oil onto the market by Saudi Arabia and Russia. He also asked for an embargo, hoping that would halt some of the flow of cheap oil onto the market, at least in the U.S., saying the two countries are trying to put America's shale oil drillers out of business. It's unfortunate that both of these countries chose, and this was an action they thought about, this particular time, while we have this global pandemic, to do something like this, Hamm said. Hamm has close ties to Trump, having donated to Trump's campaign and served on a team of economic advisors. Trump said Thursday that Saudi Arabia and Russia were in a fight on oil prices and output, and at the appropriate time, I'll get involved, he said. He did not say how. Congress has to approve the money for the administration's petroleum buy. The administration must overcome opposition from some Democratic lawmakers. The U.S. has been selling down some of its reserves, so filling the reserves back up when oil is cheap makes sense, said Ryan Fitzmaurice, energy strategist at Rabobank. But it won't have much impact on the imbalance of supply and demand because Saudi Arabia is ready to ramp up production by 3 million barrels per day next month. It's not going to change the balance too much, and the Saudis are going to increase supply by far much more than we can buy, Fitzmaurice said. The U.S. would seek to buy 30 million barrels of U.S.-produced crude initially, and a total of 77 million barrels eventually, Brulette said. Because the price is so low, the U.S. will use less taxpayer money to fill up the reserves. But the question is whether, with everything else that's going on, it's a good idea to spend $2 billion of taxpayer money, said John McWilliams, senior fellow at Columbia University Center on Global Energy Policy. I would be targeting high unemployment, he said. Saudi Arabia to slash spending by 5% as oil prices fall. By Aya Batrari, Associated Press, Dubai, United Arab Emirates. Saudi Arabia said the government will cut spending by 5%, or about $13.3 billion, to offset the impact of plunging oil prices and the effects of the new coronavirus on its economic outlook and deficit. In a statement carried by the state-run Saudi press agency late Wednesday, Finance Minister Mohammed Al-Jadan said additional measures would be taken to deal with the drop in oil prices, but he did not elaborate further. Saudi Arabia has around $500 billion in foreign reserves, but with oil prices plummeting to around $26 a barrel and tourism revenue drying up due to a suspension of the Muslim pilgrimage to Mecca, it was expected the kingdom would make cuts to its spending. Oil prices plunged as Saudis moved to flood the market and dominate sales amid a slowdown in demand for oil worldwide. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman has been racing to diversify the economy away from reliance on oil for revenue. Despite broad efforts at transforming the economy, the country continues to rely on higher oil prices of around $80 a barrel to balance its budget. Al-Jadon said the government approved a partial reduction in spending in areas with the least social and economic impact. He did not give specific details on where the spending cuts would happen. The kingdom, which leads one of the world's 20 biggest economies, relies heavily on government spending to fuel its economy and pay the salaries of most Saudi citizens who work in the public sector. Saudi Arabia has already announced a roughly $13 billion stimulus package to support the private sector and extend financing to small and medium-sized businesses impacted by the virus, which has affected countries around the world. The kingdom has halted all commercial flights and closed its borders to travelers to slow down the spread of the virus, which has infected nearly 240 people in the country. The government also ordered most public and private sector employees to work from home for 2 weeks and closed schools, universities, restaurants, malls, entertainment venues, and even mosques, while keeping food delivery, grocery stores, and pharmacies operating. Occidental's bonds plunge after Moody's cuts rating to junk. By Kevin Crowley and Rachel Adams Heard, Bloomberg News. Occidental Petroleum Corporation bonds plunged after being downgraded to junk by Moody's Investors Service as the Permian Basin shale producer struggles to deal with the high debt load in the face of oil's crash. Borrowing incurred by the $37 billion acquisition of Anadarko Petroleum Corporation last year is a burden that compromises Occidental's financial flexibility to confront the collapse in oil prices, Moody's said in a statement Wednesday. It cut the company's rating to Baa1, one step below investment grade, from Baa3. The yield on some of Occidental's long-term bonds due to mature in 2049 jumped to 7.9%. The bonds are currently priced at 60.29 cents on the dollar, down from 93.53 at the beginning of the month. The company's stock plunged as much as 11%, near the lowest in two decades, before paring losses to trade little changed. U.S. crude futures were up 12% at $22.81 a barrel by 10:23 a.m. in New York, a day after plunging 24% to the weakest level since 2002. Occidental Chief Executive Officer Vicki Hollub has mounted a rearguard action to save the company from a spiraling debt load by slashing its dividend for the first time in 30 years and cutting capital expenditure by one-third. This week, she pledged to take action to preserve the health of our company in an email sent to staff that was seen by Bloomberg, foreshadowing tough times ahead. The measures undertaken so far by Houston-based Occidental haven't been enough for Moody's, which called the 86% cut in the dividend long overdue. Without a significant and immediate reduction of more than $7 billion of debt, Occidental's cash flow metrics will be further stressed, it said. That's even more likely to be the case after crude's latest tumble to the lowest in almost two decades on Wednesday. Occidental's plan to sell assets to fund the deficit faces increasingly difficult headwinds due to the low-price environment, the ratings agency said. Hollub warned employees in her email that the company will be taking aggressive steps to combat the fallout from crude's cash without mentioning job cuts by name. In the coming days, we plan to provide you with more specifics, Hollub said. Some of the measures we will take will be temporary through the crisis, and others may be permanent. Occidental's stock has been hit especially hard in the wake of crude's historic meltdown as the coronavirus outbreak crushes demand and Saudi Arabia engages a market share battle with Russia by pumping more oil. Hollub specifically has faced criticism over her decision last year to take on debt in order to beat Chevron Corporation in a bidding war for Anadarko. billionaire investor Carl Icahn is escalating his campaign to fire Occidental's board. The enlarged Occidental had gone through a recent round of layoffs as part of efforts to achieve the synergy goals of that deal. Across the shale patch, oil field employees are nervous about the threat of further job cuts as crude oil prices continue to fall well beyond levels needed for drilling to generate cash. Many oil and gas companies will not make it through this crisis, Holub said. In my 39-year career, I've gone through many downturns and know from personal experience how difficult they are.
Hey, this is Bailey reading Viewpoints from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, March 15th. Fun Middle Ground Between Panic and Denial, commentary by Sharon Grigsby. As the first coronavirus cases hit home last week, too many North Texans are hanging on for dear life to one of two ends of the emotional seesaw, panic or denial. Our local leaders and the institutions created for our protection seem to be doing a decent enough job navigating this mysterious illness. It's just too bad they can't hand out some kind of chill pill to help folks find the middle ground in dealing with a scary bug that's likely to be with us for quite a while. The extremes are hard to miss, whether at the neighborhood coffee shop or the virtual town square on social media. For each hysterical buy up every disinfectant in the county person, you'll also find a move on down the road, nothing to see here denier. The wiser and much more difficult path is to take precautions and be patient for answers. This is a brand new disease, and it will take longer than any of us want before scientists can attain the necessary deep understanding of it. Tolerating that kind of uncertainty is asking a lot of people at a time when even before social distancing and presumptive positive became water cooler talk, or toxic political scene has the potential to turn any conversation into a contact sport. Now the coronavirus has amped the anxiety level up even more. In neighborhood social media groups, posts about porch packing thieves have been pushed aside for countless photos of grocery store aisles, accompanied by the gleeful "I found toilet paper here," or the frowny face emoji saying no luck. People are legitimately worried about getting to family weddings, winding up stock and cruise ships, how to keep kids entertained on spring break that might stretch for weeks. But information-based posts too often devolve into Facebook name-calling about who is to blame for the state of things and who is being hysterical. In places where it counts the most in North Texas, leaders seem to be making clear-headed decisions. Local city halls are putting into action the plans that have been in the works for weeks. Deep cleaning is underway in schools, arenas, airports, and other public venues. School districts are surveying families about travel plans and suggesting self-quarantines after some trips. Places of worship are informally rehearsing in the event of a full-blown quarantine how they would recreate their services in studio settings. I'd love to be one of those adventurous types who are grabbing at the coronavirus-spawned opportunities of cheap flights to exotic destinations, or better yet, to buy into the argument that this is all much ado over something that hasn't yet killed nearly as many people as the garden variety flu. Comforting myself with the flu analogy worked for a week or so, but I'm increasingly losing patience with it. The flu is notoriously contagious and sometimes deadly, but it's predictable. Medical experts understand the disease, how it behaves and how it spreads, and how to treat it. Coronavirus is a widely unknown variable in the disease world. With doctors figuring it out as they go, the best that they can do is to make their best guess on closing schools, quarantining employees, canceling sports events, and the gazillion other decisions that will have to be made in coming days. Faced with these inconsistencies, it's tempting for the healthy ones among us to point out to the statistics that 80% or so of cases will cause at most mild symptoms, but the other 20%, severe pneumonia is a possibility, and 5% of those can become critical or even fatal. The expert whose words kicked me hardest in the heart is Dr. Nancy Messiner, the director of the Center for Disease Control and Prevention's National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Disease. She spoke earlier last week about the people most at risk of becoming seriously ill, those who are over 80 and those who have underlying health conditions. It's mostly for the sake that we can, for their sake that we can't afford to make light of the coronavirus. Anything that those of us in good health can do to steer clear of the disease, the more lives in those two vulnerable groups that are potentially saved. Among the many local leaders making contingency plans last week is Senior Pastor George Mason, whose Wilshire Baptist Church gained international notoriety in 2014 when the finance of a congregate was diagnosed with the Ebola virus. Although Mason cautioned that we mustn't create a false equivalency between the coronavirus and the far more deadly Ebola, he told me that some of the lessons learned 6 years ago still apply, especially when it comes to providing comfort and confidence. He recalled the first Sunday morning after Thomas Eric Duncan was diagnosed with Ebola, after traveling from Liberia to Dallas to see church member Louis Tro. We looked up into our church balcony and saw 15 TV news cameras lining the rail, he recalled. In the vacuum of information available, in the midst of panic across Dallas, we had the opportunity to preach a message of faith over fear, he said. Although Duncan died, Tro and her family members, all of whom were quarantined, never became ill, and Wilshire's members never wavered in their support. Mason sees that as a message for us all to heed in the latest medical crisis. Believe the science and let it lead the way as we all practice moderation in all things. That's good advice. It likely won't be the last unsteady week, so let's all endeavor to do it with a little more grace and a little less snark.
Oxygen tubing fix may help others. To your good health for Friday. Dear Dr. Roach, I have COPD and I am on oxygen. My cat was chewing on my oxygen tubing and I thought I would have to give up my pet. A friend suggested I get an 1/2-inch split conduit tubing at an automotive store. It's used to wrap wiring in the engine to keep squirrels and other animals from chewing on the wires. You slip the oxygen tubing into the conduit tube, and your pet will not chew on it. I hope this helps someone else to be able to keep their pets. Dr. Roach writes, I thank CCS for writing. It's a solution to a problem I didn't know existed, and I also hope somebody finds it useful. Pets are extremely important social supports for many people.
Man leaves wife, daughters at curb after birthday dinner. Dear Abby. Dear Abby, I coordinated and paid for a 70th birthday party for my terminally ill husband. 14 people were invited, and 7 of them were related to my only sister, Carla. During the dinner, her husband was rude to the waitress, and at the end of the party was screaming and yelling at Carla over the valet parking ticket. As they left the restaurant, he shoved her. He then got in their car and left my sister and her stepdaughters from a previous marriage standing there. They had to order a rideshare to get home. I texted her later to be sure she and the girls had arrived safely. She said yes and told me she would talk to me the next day. When I didn't hear from her, I followed up. The next time we talked, she acted like nothing had happened. When I pursued the discussion and asked what prompted his strange behavior, she said, I don't know what to tell you. I said, you don't know? And she replied, I didn't say that. I said, I don't know what to tell you. After a lengthy discussion, I told her that unless we had some assurance that the incident wouldn't be repeated, we didn't want to see her husband again. She said it wouldn't be a problem. I have invited her to numerous family events, and she comes solo. But now she is blaming me for tearing the family apart. What can I do now, if anything? In a mess in California. Dear In a mess, your sister is apparently married to an abuser with a short fuse and has resigned herself to it. She has my sympathy, but she should not blame you for any of it. She could really use some help from a support group for abused partners, because things will not get better. If you prefer not to see her horror of a husband, stand your ground and do not allow yourself to be guilted or coerced into it. He owes all of you an apology. Dear Abby, I am engaged to a wonderful, sweet, hard-working 30-year-old man. We get along well and make each other happy. The trouble is how he comes across to others. He is so eager to be friends that he opens up much too quickly, revealing and venting about things like his work problems. It makes people uncomfortable. He has been called out on it several times by various people. Some even straight up called him creepy, and he will stop for a while. But he falls into the same pattern the next time he meets somebody new. This whole thing is made worse by his anxiety. When someone calls him out on this behavior, he experiences crippling panic attacks. They cause him to apologize profusely, which only exacerbates the problem. He refuses to seek therapy or treatment for his anxiety. I am at a loss about how to help him, other than listen to his troubles and offer support when I can. What should I do? Challenged Fiancé. Dear Fiancé, your fiancé may be a great guy, but unless you want to spend your life with a partner who refuses to get help for his emotional problems and doesn't seem to learn from his mistakes, it may be time to step back and reevaluate this relationship. Much as you would like to, you can't fix what's wrong with him. Only he can do that. If you marry him, the chances are you will wind up as socially isolated as he is. What a shame. Jacqueline Bigger's Stars. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5, dynamic. 4, positive. 3, average. 2, so-so. 1, difficult. Note: Bigger's Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Aries and a moon in Aquarius. Happy birthday for Friday, March 20, 2020. This year, a promotion is definitely in your cards. You have worked so hard, and the acclaim you will receive is well-deserved. An elderly family member will need more help after mid-year, and you step in with the rest of your family to provide it. If single, you play the field and continue to be quite choosy as to who deserves your commitment. Friends feel more important than partners and get your lion's share of time. If attached, you and your partner choose to go on a vacation with friends. The locale will turn out to be mind-opening. By the end of the year, you feel like newlyweds. Gemini is fun to share with. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 5 stars. Today, friends and professional colleagues can't get enough of you. This makes you impatient for the work day to be over. You will have something to celebrate, and you can do it in grand style. Tonight, stay out as late as possible. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 4 stars. Despite work responsibilities, you feel like being a homebody today. You can easily accomplish your work from home. Beam in more of what you want. Don't hold back. Discussions go better via email, and you end up winning. Tonight, a nicely cooked dinner. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 4 stars. You are daydreaming today how to make the world a better place. Instigate brainstorming sessions with willing colleagues. A professional organization invites you to be a speaker for a future event. Friends want you to go out after work. Tonight, fun times. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. A professional partnership is proposed at work that makes you think twice. It would involve mutual monies, so ask advice from a trusted mentor. You're normally cautious with finances, but consider taking the plunge. Tonight, get a good night's sleep. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 2 stars. Despite a prior commitment with a partner, a part of you dreams of getting away from it all today. You reach a happy compromise after honestly sharing your feelings. Still, you are restless. Allow yourself to satisfy your wanderlust. Tonight, make no plans. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 3 stars. A financial matter needs settling and can be done by adding it to your to-do list. You accomplish a lot today simply by checking off each errand. The urge to rework your wardrobe for spring must be. Tonight, buy new clothes. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 2 stars. Your thoughts turn to relationships when you should be working. You are asked to sign on the dotted line for something that you feel hesitant about. Take the time to discuss this with loved ones, and don't be afraid to ask for direction. Tonight, take a breather. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. A health matter which may be genetic to your family is foremost in your mind today. You must consult the specialist you have been waiting to see. When you do, you will sigh a breath of relief. Family will want to celebrate with you. Tonight, spend quality time. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 5 stars. News comes in via a light flirtation at work and surprises you. You may wish to publish online, thereby helping many people. A child is especially needy of your time. You discover a secret hurt and resolve it. Tonight, plan a special outing with your loved ones. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. A home concern calls for more money to be poured into it. Research options and get estimates. Despite family weighing in, you are the best judge of what to do in this matter. Trust yourself and your sharp instincts. Tonight, spend a cozy time indoors and eat well. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 3 stars. You are in for a surprise as your day begins. A neighbor brings you unexpected news about the neighborhood. You must decide which side you are on. Your opinion is greatly valued. Work goes swiftly, and you are able to leave early. Tonight, only casual chit-chat. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 3 stars. Your profitable idea leads you out of what you feel might be a slight depression. Your mood brightens considerably as the day gets underway. A financial matter has to be dealt with. You resolve it after a relatively light-hearted talk. Tonight, to sleep early. Born today, epic poet Ovid, 43 BC, TV host Mr. Fred Rogers, 1928, director Spike Lee, 1957.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.